A federal lawsuit accuses Jacksonville-based Fanatics of racial discrimination and harassment. A look at the complaint and your calls just ahead. Good morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. It's Monday, and we are back on the air, as we are every morning at 9, live from Studio 5. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, too. Just ahead, a federal lawsuit against online retail giant Fanatics. What's being accused? Give us a call, 549-2937. Then later, it's an innovative way to study climate change at UNF. By using alligator eggs. Yeah, alligator eggs. We'll explain that too. Plus, Culpepper, the pads are on, and Jaguars training camp is off and running. A look at sports this morning. All of that ahead this hour. But first, this Monday, a well-known Jacksonville company is facing allegations of racial discrimination and harassment. Fanatics, the online retail giant known as a global leader in sports clothing sales, is battling a federal lawsuit from the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC says a Fanatics employee named Vincent Perkins was subjected to racial slurs in an overall hostile environment. The complaint alleges, among other incendiary claims, that a Fanatics general manager referred to black employees as monkeys or Africans, and that a human resources manager called African-American employees at Fanatics baboons. Perkins says he was denied a promotion at the company when he complained about this climate to human resources. Now, Fanatics did issue a public statement last week denying all wrongdoing and promising to defend itself in court. The company is not going to discuss this pending litigation. We are going to discuss this, though, as we welcome David Cotton of the Jacksonville Daily Record. He's been covering the Fanatics federal complaint and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good to see you. Here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about this federal lawsuit against Fanatics? And what are your thoughts about workplace experiences here on the First Coast? This certainly wouldn't be the first time a large company in this area was accused. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Comments already coming in on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Okay, so Fanatics is known as the company that provides sports clothing to the NFL, Major League Baseball, other Major League sports and apparel brands. It's had huge success over the years, David, here in Jacksonville, playing in this sports retail space.
Yeah, you know, they started out as a brick and mortar retailer in the Orange Park Mall in the mid-90s when the Jaguars got to town. And I think the best way to describe them today is they're basically the Amazon of sports apparel. They're what's
right.
called they refer to themselves as a V-commerce. You've heard of e-commerce. They not only sell all of this apparel, they are in the designing and manufacturing of that apparel now today, too.
Okay, so big success, employer base in the area. Now they're hit with this federal lawsuit through the EEOC. They filed the suit last week alleging a racially divided workplace. Let's go through this complaint, in particular the allegations of an employee who is a current employee there, Vincent Perkins. He's alleging really horrific language coming from management at Fanatics.
Yeah, I know in our story we picked out three or four of those statements that were given there, the things like referring to him as having, you know, Aunt Jemima lips, or being called a monkey, or asking whether or not he could read because, you know, quote, black men can't read. Very serious allegations here. And what's interesting to me is this is not just a, you know, an employee with a random local attorney bringing these charges against them. This is the, you know, the EEOC. Their job is literally to enforce federal law prohibiting employee discrimination.
It's 549-2937 to join us. For a complaint to get to the level of an EEOC filing, it is a long, torturous process. And again, we do need to stress Fanatics is denying all of these allegations and will defend itself in court. That's all they're saying publicly at this time. At the same time, for the EEOC to take a case, isn't it fair to say there has to be a significant amount of documentation before the government will get involved in a complaint like this?
Absolutely. It starts with receiving the charges. They, you know, decide whether or not it's enough for them to begin an investigation. They conduct a very thorough investigation. It includes interviews with other employees, company management, this particular employee. And then from there, they decide, you know, it's a pretty hefty step to bring a federal lawsuit against a company the size of Fanatics, who more than likely has enough money to defend itself through its legal counsel. And to be public about it, to issue a statement saying we are bringing these charges against Fanatics. You know, two things that stick out to me about this, Melissa, is, companies the size of Fanatics, you know, it's not uncommon to receive these types of complaints and lawsuits. Some
sure.
are legit.
Some are legit. Some are frivolous.
No. And what you typically, you can always gauge how seriously a company is taking these charges by their statement or lack thereof. Typically, companies will say no comment, right? Within 5 minutes of me asking a just simple state, you know, do you have a statement about this through a PR email? 5 minutes, I got a return. So this just tells me Fanatics is taking this very seriously. And the fact that they mentioned that they're going to fight this vigorously in court also tells me they're not ready to settle.
They'll fight it. Going beyond Fanatics, David, this is by far from the first time we've seen a large company or entity in Jacksonville run afoul of the EEOC. As just one example, our own reporter Ryan Bank reported about a year and a half ago, allegations of racism, African-American employees denied promotions at JEA, the city utility. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is involved in that lawsuit. And just last week, last Thursday, the Department of Justice announced that it had reached a settlement with the city of Jacksonville to resolve allegations, longstanding allegations of racism and employees of color being denied promotions in the Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department. That's been going for so long. And so just the other day, we heard that DOJ is announcing that the city is going to pay $5 million to settle an employment discrimination lawsuit among firefighters. And so, you know, certainly Jacksonville isn't unique among American cities in dealing with these types of issues. At the same time, this is a city that is racially divided, is still struggling to overcome the legacy of Jim Crow and incredibly painful racial past here. And so viewed through that lens, the way corporate America deals with these complaints has been fascinating and sometimes, I think, disturbing for African Americans to watch because there's this sense that, you know, this just keeps coming up again and again in the workplace.
And for this particular employee who, you know, for what it's worth, probably could have decided to go to another place of work if he felt unsafe or felt like he was being discriminated against. What this tells me is I think African Americans in the workplace are fed up, and they should be, in dealing with this. And not only for their own self, but for the corporate culture as it is, I think, they're stepping up more. We're hearing more about these type of allegations and the EEOC stepping up, not only in Jacksonville, but in other cities as well, to address these with these major companies. And, you know, what ultimately is going to come of this? We're not sure. I think internally at Fanatics, they're probably already having the conversation of, okay, let's prepare to have, you know, racial sensitivity training, or let's have, you know, we're going to address our HR policy. But what real change is really going to happen is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see from Fanatics.
And there's an incredible amount of detail in this complaint, as you pointed out, allegations that this gentleman, Mr. Perkins, either heard directly or was advised of comments like, why does he have those big Aunt Jemima lips? Africans in Europe know their place, but not in the U.S., referring to black employees as monkeys, just hideously racist comments. At the same time, Perkins is alleging that he was denied a promotion because he complained about this. Now, that's similar to some of the African-American employees at JEA and their EEOC complaint, alleging they've been passed over for advancement because of the color of their skin. Same thing we saw through the decades with the complaint that wound its way through a long process at JFRD. Proving that is a high bar.
It absolutely is.
It's one thing to say, you know, these racist things were said to me and it was outrageous. It can be more difficult, can't it, for an employee to prove I was up for a promotion and I know I didn't get it because I'm a person of color.
Especially if it's just that one employee. Now, if you have multiple employees making these accusations, it becomes a little bit easier to describe a trend, to acknowledge that. But the level, like you said, the level of detail in this complaint, and it will be interesting to see who is deposed here, who actually is interviewed, you know, through the filings here in the Middle District of Florida. But yeah.
Which, by the way, that district extends from Jacksonville down through Orlando all the way over to Tampa. It's a huge district.
Yeah.
So for this to even get this far in this huge sprawling district is also noteworthy, I think, to point out.
I think so, too. I think the fact that it was also done in a very public way. I mean, the EEOC issued a release. I mean, they literally said, we are doing this. This is not something that was under the radar. And I think, you know, we mentioned Mr. Perkins, who's been an employee with Fanatics since 2012. He says that this behavior began the day he started when he was referred to as the N-word.
On his first day of work.
You know, it's been what 6 years now that he's been employed there as of June. This wasn't something that just bubbled up overnight for him, I believe.
All right, let's go to your calls. Jacksonville's own Fanatics, the Amazon of sports apparel, as it's called, the online retail giant that has contracts with the NFL, Major League Baseball, other companies. It's accused of discrimination in a federal lawsuit. What are your thoughts about this complaint? What have been your workplace experiences around town? We want you to give us a call and share your thoughts right now. 549-2937. Linda is in Orange Park. Hey, Linda, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that my son worked at Fanatics and the discrimination was rampant. And my advice to him was, leave Jacksonville, which he has done, and doubled his salary.
Well, wait a minute. Tell me what your son experienced there, if you could.
What he experienced was a clear delineation between the way that blacks and whites were treated. He didn't experience any of the verbal abuse, but it was clear that the salaries were different. That people who were highly skilled did not get promoted, and no reason was given. And if you made a complaint at all, you were reassigned to the warehouse, which does not have air conditioning.
Is your son African American?
Yes.
Okay. And so what was he hired to do at Fanatics?
He was in computer network.
Okay, and how long did he work there?
About a year, year and a half.
And he just decided this is not a good climate for me?
Well, I encouraged him to leave. So he's in the north now and doubled his salary.
Well, that's good to hear. And I'm sorry he had that experience, Linda. Thanks for the call. That's Linda in Orange Park. You know, that is the last thing I think a CEO of a company listening to this broadcast wants to hear, David. This perception that young, talented people feel that this is not a welcoming city, this is not a forward-looking city, this is a place where they might face discrimination, hostility at work. I'm heading out of here. I'm going to go somewhere else where I can make more money. That's not the climate the business community in this town wants.
No, not at all, especially the part where, you know, she says, well, he doubled his salary and is now in a more welcoming place. You know, it's funny because a lot of what Linda was just talking about there, that seemed to be a lot of the trending comments that we've seen on social media through some of the other news stations here as well. You know, yeah, I worked there. It was the same type of climate, or I know somebody who's worked there and it's mm-hmm. experienced similar things. So Fanatics is going to have a lot of explaining to do, I think, because it's not just one person, it seems.
And changing company cultures is like turning an aircraft carrier around. You know, it's not an easy or nimble process. And companies that have been through the ringer on this type of stuff know that once a culture is, once a narrative's taken hold about a company culture, not only do you have to change the culture, you have to change the public perception of your culture. You have to change the narrative.
I mean, it becomes an entire PR campaign. I mean, you really have to go and be proactive about that. You know, what's sad here about Fanatics is we very rarely get an inside look at how the workings of this major Jacksonville company, you know, how it operates. And the one thing that comes out is it's, you know, racially divided. It's an uncomfortable place to work.
And, how profitable is it?
I think revenue is around $2.2 billion annually.
There's a lot of money to be made in sports merchandising.
I mean, it has. And so just to give a quick, you know, view of Fanatics, it not only is just, you know, selling it through its website. Fanatics, when you go to the Jaguar shop or you go buy something from the St. Louis Cardinals online shop, that is a Fanatics product. That is, Fanatics runs those e-commerce sites. Like we were saying earlier, they also manufacture, they design that apparel. So when the Eagles win the Super Bowl this year, the Jaguars next year, they'll have shirts ready to go right there to ship.
You name it, they've got that logo and they're shipping it out to those Philly fans. Okay, 549-2937. Lots of calls about the federal lawsuit alleging racial discrimination at Fanatics. Richard in Murray Hill. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Hi, I can't speak to any racially motivated actions that might have been committed by any employee, but having worked with community agencies, this employer seems to me to be one of those that prefers to hire poorly educated people. And initially I thought, well, it's good to give them a great start, they got a little background, that's okay. But over the years, they appear to be, the frontline employees appear to stay 1, 2, 3 months and not much longer, to leave often under vague circumstances of what they did wrong this time. And it may be that this has developed a culture. If you have short-term employees from the underclass, you don't always have to treat them well. They tend to take, you know, discrimination or poor treatment with, you know, few complaints in my experience. So that may be part of what's forming the culture over there that allows bad actors with job security to go unchecked.
Yeah, thanks for that, Richard. David.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to, you know, if you've got a lot of turnover, it's very easy to sort of chalk it up to these just people don't have a great work drive or great work ethic, and, you know, they just can't hang it here, rather than just look at, you know, middle management and say, you know, maybe we have a problem here. Especially, you know, it would be very interesting for me to see, you know, the racial makeup of mid to, you know, higher management levels, see what that is about. I think there's also going to be pressure on Fanatics to let this general manager go, let this HR manager go. Just because it's not a great news cycle for Fanatics right now. They're not winning this PR battle at all.
Are they publicly traded?
I don't believe so. No,
I know they are.
They're a subsidiary of a much larger company.
Looks like Kinetic LLC.
Yeah, they're a much larger company.
But when you're not publicly traded, I'm generalizing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's less oversight. There's more opaqueness about your operations.
Oh yeah. You know? I mean, anything can set off an alteration in your stock prices. So companies like that are very nimble. They have to be, especially with their statements and how they, you know, disclose their financials and everything.
Okay. Lots of calls on this. Let's go to Chuck at the beaches right now. Hi, Chuck. Hello.
Hi guys. I'm kind of surprised that the human resource department at this corporation would allow that. I have a cell phone, and I touch my cell phone, and it records. They make little teeny tiny body cams that you can put on yourself. How is it that these people don't know that an employee can simply touch his phone? He doesn't have to videotape it. He can record everything that goes on. Do they not know what happened to Roseanne Barr? How is it that the human resources, with today's ability to record everything that goes on around you, and I don't know if it's legal or not, but how do they not know to protect themselves from a jury of their peers. Because I tell you, if I'm on a jury and this happened, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. How about the late Roger Ailes?
Yeah.
Look how he was forced out of his own company. Gretchen Carlson, former anchor, recorded him on her iPhone. And so, but getting to Chuck's other comment, he's saying, how could HR not be more savvy? This complaint actually accuses HR of making some of these remarks, right?
Which is wild, because I don't know about you, but most HR departments, those are the ones who are telling you overtly,
that's
like,
right,
hey, watch yourself. You know, it's complacency, and that's the only thing I can think of.
Now, we do need to stress once again, Fanatics denies all of the allegations in this complaint, but they aren't commenting publicly as this is pending litigation. 549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to reinforce what one of your earlier callers said. I've been to several job fairs where Fanatics has been there, and it seems like their recruiting effort is geared towards minorities. Their recruiting booths are just about universally staffed by minorities.
Okay. Thank you for providing that information. And yeah, I mean, it's really striking to think about the fact that, you know, sports is like a lot of things in this country. It's got a diverse fan base.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you'd think you'd want the most diverse workforce possible working on these products. But going beyond that comment, let me get to a few social media remarks. Here's one from Brian. The allegation that white employees could loaf about, but blacks were constantly kept busy cleaning, is worrisome. It sounds like nostalgia for the idea that it's the black man's lot to toil. Is that one of the allegations in the complaint, that African Americans were forced to work at a faster clip than their white colleagues?
Well, basically, the allegation is, you know, white employees could sort of sit around and do nothing and not get reprimanded for it. But if a black employee were to, you know, sit around and sort of look like they're not doing their job, they were very quick to be reprimanded and told, you know, get back to work.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Mark. Great time for Jacksonville with this and the developing Chamblin's situation. Maybe we need a days without being a national embarrassment sign hanging at City Hall. Today it reads zero. That's a reference to allegations about a downtown bookstore that's being accused of similar culture. We don't have enough information on that, though, to get into that at this time. Maybe later this week. David Cotton.
Yeah. With regards to Fanatics, it's a black eye right now, even just having the allegations out there. You know, again, these are just allegations, and Fanatics is, of course, denying any wrongdoing. But Fanatics, if you know, they have a lot to lose here. They have the exclusive apparel deals with every major league sports league in America. They're working to grow that business internationally. And not only with the major league sports, with, you know, CBS Sports and Fox Sports and all of these other media groups, with Nike. They just announced a huge, you know, deal with Nike last year. You know, they are going to continue to look to grow their business. So I'm sure the NFL, which is no stranger to controversy in the last 24 months when it comes to racial division,
sure,
is probably keeping a very close eye on this situation.
David in Arlington. Hi, David. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that I think that particularly when you have cases like this, unfortunately, I think it happens a little bit too much. I think you, co-host a moment ago, mentioned how there's a culture of not seeing African-Americans and people of color, and unfortunately, even women in some positions of management. And I think there's kind of just a mindset where, you know, you're expecting a certain type of worker to kind of stay in a certain type of position. Maybe you, kind of like you're mentioning, you expect some of these people to be low skilled, maybe not the most qualified. And then we do have, you know, like a woman earlier called and said about someone who's working at computers. When you have someone who is kind of, you know, maybe ready to get promoted or anything of that nature, or if they do go against the status quo, I think that's kind of taken them back and takes people back, and they, get very defensive about it and say, you know, this has been working for so long, you know, why do we need to change it now? You know, this person's disrupting what has driven us so much success. So So I think it's really, again, just something that makes people uncomfortable. And I think if we were to get maybe more, you know, diversity and higher levels of management, I think that could really go a long way toward having a cultural change.
Yeah, David, thanks for those comments. And data bears that out over and over again. When companies are studied, the more diverse their senior leadership team, the more the culture is more inclusive of lower level employees. That's not rocket science.
No, I mean, it reflects, not everybody is cookie cutter. We all come from different backgrounds. And especially if you can come from different racial backgrounds, I think it's a healthier situation for a company, especially if it reflects, you know, the everyday worker there. With this situation with Mr. Perkins, he claims that he was actually told, you're in line for a promotion. You know, keep working. And then when these complaints came about, he was told, yeah, too bad. Sorry, you're not going to get these promotions anymore.
Right. And now the employee, who, by the way, is still working at the company, Vincent Perkins, the complaint through the EEOC seeks not only to bar Fanatics from discriminating and engaging in retaliation against him or others, but he's also seeking back pay, compensation for pain and suffering, punitive damages, etc. Probably all payouts the company can afford. What they cannot afford, as you pointed out, David, is the PR fallout from a big federal complaint like this one, which will take its time winding its way through the process. As I pointed out earlier, the city is finally just now settling over this JFRD federal lawsuit that's been going on for decades.
Yeah, these things take a long time. There'll be appeals and what have you. I think with Fanatics, what is the better PR move for them? I think, and I hate to say this because this is, you know, this is just a stance a company has to take, is what PR stance is better for us. Do we fight this in court? Do we settle? And both of those things have implications. If we, you know, fight this in court, we're saying that we're not, you know, that this person is basically lying and that we don't, you know, value complaints and things like that. If we settle, we're admitting some sort of guilt. And then from there, you have to change things. You have to hold what Starbucks did, you know, racial insensitivity training, or, produce commercials that say we're taking things seriously. You know,
Denny's comes to mind too.
Yeah. I mean,
there's so many national examples,
and I think what it sort of points out that, and I think this is something we mentioned earlier, that, like, I think minority employees are just tired of the status quo, and they know now they can, you know, with social media, with obviously the legal system, they can take these complaints and put it right back in the face of their employers.
We'll continue to follow it. Thanks for your reporting and thoughts on this. David Cotton of the Daily Record on the federal lawsuit against Fanatics. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And much more still ahead on the show later. Culpepper stops by as the Jaguars put on the pads for training camp. But up next, studying climate change through alligators. They're eggs, to be exact. An unusual project on the UNF campus. We'll tell you about it next.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. It's hurricane season. Prepare now by learning your evacuation zone, updating your disaster kit to include water, non-perishable food items, a flashlight with extra batteries, a radio, and other important items. Pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide at your public library and visit jacksready.com for more information. Tune your radio to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
WJCT's Jaguars season parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown, includes paved space and indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it's a fascinating study looking into the effects of climate change here in Florida, and it's being done with alligators. They're eggs, to be specific, 400 alligator eggs, if we want to be exact, and they are incubating right now somewhere on the UNF campus. Well, what's going on with this? Well, researchers are going to wait till the alligator eggs hatch and then see what sex they are. Now, in human beings, whether you're male or female is determined by your genetics. But in alligators and many other reptile species, whether a newborn is male or female is determined by the temperature of the nest. And with climate change increasing temperatures around the world, people are growing increasingly concerned about the balance between male and female in reptile species. A big imbalance could lead to decreased reproduction, maybe even extinction. So if it's found that there's a big imbalance in gender in these alligator eggs at UNF, that could be a bellwether of what's in store for us here in Florida in terms of environmental damage and economic losses due to changes in our climate. Right now, we're pleased to welcome the researchers on this. It's Dr. Adam Rosenblatt, UNF Assistant Professor of Biology. Professor, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And his student Molly O'Brien is here. She actually built some of these egg nests and is monitoring and collecting data on the alligator eggs. Hey, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
By the way, how big are these eggs? I picture huge eggs. Are they big?
They're about 1.5 times the size of a chicken egg, and they're a little bit longer rather than rounder.
Okay, so you're in charge of the egg monitoring, and we'll get to that in a minute. But first, Dr. Rosenblatt, how did you come up with this idea?
I had this idea about 2 years ago, and it came after reading some of the literature. People have been looking at other reptile species for a while, like all the sea turtles have this type of sex determination. And so, you know, people are usually very interested in sea turtle biology. So they were, you know, people have been studying this for about 10, 15 mm-hmm. years, but nobody has been studying it in alligators or any other crocodilians. And so I wanted to start to look into it.
A very Florida type of study.
Yes, very Florida.
And so you've got the eggs sitting in an incubator, you're waiting for them to hatch, and then what?
Well, so they're actually sitting in artificial alligator nests,
okay,
not incubators, which is one of the unique things about this study, because most studies on alligator eggs in the past, they are done in incubators where they're held at a constant temperature. But what we wanted to do with this study was we wanted to really replicate a more natural environment where, you know, temperature goes up during the day, down at night, and see how that would affect these alligator eggs.
And because the temperature of the nest determines gender, if the nest keeps getting hotter, are we going to see more male alligators, more female alligators? What will typically happen?
So typically the way it works is if the nest is less than 88 degrees Fahrenheit, then it produces 100% females. If the nest is between 88 and 94 degrees, it produces a mix of males and females. And then again, if it gets too hot above 95, it produces 100% females again. So the concern and why we're doing this research is that if temperatures keep getting hotter as we expect them to, and it raises the temperature of those nest cavities, then it could lead to 100% female populations, which is not good for the, you know, reproductive capacity of the species.
Okay. And for those that hate alligators who think, well, so what if they die out? Molly O'Brien, let's talk a little bit about why it would actually be a really calamitous thing to see a species such as this go extinct.
Right. So alligators are apex predators in their ecosystems, and that means that they have a huge role in regulating how the rest of the ecosystem is operating. And so when you lose an apex predator in an ecosystem, it's called trophic cascade. So it really does have impacts on every other organism lower than it.
It disrupts the entire ecosystem, in other words.
Right. And alligators are a huge part of our Floridian identity. You know, we even have the University of Florida named, you know, their mascot is alligator. So it's part of our identity, and it's a huge source of income for our state.
As the planet keeps warming, are you anticipating, what does the data show about the long-term future of a reptile species like the gator?
Right. So alligators are found in the southeast of the United States. And so our climate change predictions currently are that in the southeast United States, temperatures are going to be getting higher, and there could also be changes in our rainfall. And so those two different factors do affect the sex of alligators.
Are you anticipating extinction or just a weakening of the species over time?
So both of those are possible. It will result in a general decline in alligator populations and also a potential extinction.
Dr. Adam Rosenblatt, this is one example of many we could point to showing how rising temperatures have an interlocking effect, I guess, on so many different aspects of nature, and then tangentially, eventually, business.
Yeah.
You're trying to wake people up to the economic impact of climate change, which might be hard for some people to connect the dots from messed up alligator eggs to what Florida's facing economically. But if you could, let's explain that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the scary things about climate change in general, is that it's going to impact every aspect of our lives in one way or the other. And it's really hard to predict those changes. When it comes to alligators, I mean, a lot of people, you know, who live in Florida probably take alligators for granted, don't really think about them that much. But they are a huge source of tourism, right? There's huge alligator farming industries that bring in tens of millions of dollars to the state every year. There's alligator hunting, which, as Molly was saying, is, you know, can be a part of our identity here in this state. And so losing the alligator would have negative impacts on all of those different sectors. And I do just want to make it clear something that Molly said. So we are concerned about the sort of long-term health of the alligator population, but I just want to make it clear there's no danger to alligators in Florida in the near future. Like, yeah, you don't have to worry about them over the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. Right now, the estimated population of the state is about 1.5 million, and we're still going to have alligators. The concern is that in 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, really far down the line, that this could be having an effect and causing decreases in those time frames.
A guy took an alligator to the convenience store last week. Did you see that headline?
We did see that story. Yeah. It always distresses me when people use alligators as a weapon.
As a weapon. Yeah, really. You know, and that's the thing about climate change that I think is difficult for so many people is the timeline. We're talking about a slow moving disaster that's decades away, and there isn't full agreement on whether we're going to see rapid cascading effects or slow incremental effects. So it can be difficult, I think, for people to kind of get their arms around this, but this is a really innovative way to study this issue. Tell me a little more, Molly, about how you're monitoring these eggs and how you're collecting data on them.
So the data that we collect on the eggs is that we are continuously collecting temperature data from within the nest, so we know what temperature the eggs are being incubated at. We're also measuring the percent oxygen, the percent relative humidity, and other metrics determining the temperature of the nest.
When are they due to hatch?
We're looking at the end of August.
End of August. Hottest time of the year.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable up on the roof. I mostly work
at
night.
On the roof of a building.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's probably smart. Nobody can get to them, steal them. You wouldn't want that, would you?
No, definitely wouldn't want that. That was part of our permit from Florida Fish and Wildlife to do this research, was they had to be in a secure area.
How hard was it to get that permit, doctor?
Florida Fish and Wildlife is fantastic. I love working with them.
Uh-huh.
And they were this permit was actually pretty easy to get. I was very, very pleased.
Still, though, in a few more weeks, you're going to have a bunch of alligators running around on your roof.
Yeah,
I mean,
Molly
and I feel like, but how big is a newborn alligator?
Molly and I feel like proud parents on the cusp of parenthood. So each alligator when they're born is, you know, about a foot long, maybe a little bit less. I also just want to make it clear they're not going to be running around the UNF campus. We have protocols in place to make sure that all of these alligators are going to be accounted for.
Just curious, what are the protocols?
So the protocols, Molly and I and some other students who are working with us are going to be monitoring these nests over the next couple of weeks for any signs of hatching. And those signs are when the alligators start to make sounds inside the egg. They'll make this kind of squeaking sound. And so if you hear them making that squeaking sound, then we're going to remove the eggs from the nest and bring them down into my lab so that we can more closely monitor them.
And once they're hatched, what are you going to do? Are you going to get a gator wrangler to come in and take them away? What goes on here? I would be a little nervous being there when they hatch, honestly.
We're going to keep the eggs in my lab for about 3 or 4 days. We're going to measure them. We're going to, you know, figure out what sex they are. And then they're going to be returned to the wild where they came from.
Who's going to do that? Fish and Wildlife?
Fish and Wildlife isn't going to do it. They're, we're going to be taking them back to the agency that they came from.
When they come right out of the egg, can they bite? Can they hurt you?
Yes, they can definitely bite.
That's what I would think.
You should be, you know, careful around alligators of any size at all times. The lucky thing about hatchling alligators is that they're they are more scared, way more scared of you than you are of them. And if they did bite you, which they're not going to bite me or Molly or any of our, you know, other collaborators, because we're, again, taking safety precautions. But if they bit you, they couldn't do that much damage. So it's not too big of a worry.
Be like a dog bite?
Maybe, yeah, it'd be a little bit like a small dog bite, like a chihuahua.
I'll take your word for it. Now, you know, this is something that just captures people's attention because, let's face it, alligators are an irresistible topic. But scientifically speaking, based on what you already know, do you anticipate all female eggs when they're hatched? What do you think is going to happen?
So the exciting thing about this research is that nobody's ever done an experiment like this before. So to be honest, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We can't predict, which is why we're doing the research, right? We want to know what's going to happen. But I can tell you in other species, there's been some really alarming trends. So there's this big study out of Australia just this year. They were looking at green sea turtles, which are another species like alligators that have this temperature-dependent sex determination. And they looked at two different nesting beaches in Australia, and the southern nesting beach, which is cooler, a little bit closer to Antarctica, that nesting beach produced about 30% males and about 70% females, which is typical for that species. Then they looked at a nesting beach that was further north, closer to the equator. That beach was producing 99% females. And they estimated that over the last 20 years, that beach every year has been producing more than 90% females. So the concern is that if that southern beach gets warmer, right, and also starts producing 99% females, then you're going to have so few males in the ocean that the reproduction rate could seriously decline for
a
the
lot
species.
Fewer of that species.
Yeah.
What a fascinating study. And please let us know the result once they hatch.
We definitely
will.
Take
some pictures. I'm sure you will.
Oh, yeah. We'll have video. We'd be happy to come back on and talk about the results.
Thanks so much, Dr. Adam Rosenblatt. He's UNF Assistant Professor of Biology. His research assistant, student Molly O'Brien. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
A quick break, and in a moment, the pads are on and the Jaguars are back at it. A look at training camp and the rest of the weekend sports news and notes after a short break as Culpepper stops by. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9.
Florida filmmaker and actor Riku Browning is best known for portraying the Gill Man in all of the underwater scenes in the three Creature from the Black Lagoon films of the 1950s. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Riku Browning. We'll discuss the Atlantic Coastline Railway and the Rosewood Massacre. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
You go to college, you study economics, but there is something missing.
I find it completely inexcusable that the global financial crisis, 4 years after it happened, wasn't mentioned in the core economics module. Absolutely unforgivable, in my opinion.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Maybe that ought to change. Some people who are trying, next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Is your destiny determined by your zip code?
African American babies were being born at a higher rate of low birth weight in every single state in the nation.
In communities that appear healthy, the data finds blind spots. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Most people who experience debilitating anxiety would rather not think about it. Courtney Barnett set her symptoms to music. I'm having trouble breathing in. The singer-songwriter's new album is called Tell Me How You Really Feel, an intimate tour inside her head. Courtney Barnett on the power of getting personal, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it's that time of year again. Can you believe it? The Jaguars have kicked off training camp. I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? The Jaguars pulling on the pads for the first time over the weekend. How's the season shaping up? Cole Pepper has some thoughts and some cold cuts for the end of the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, this is the time of year where everybody is great because everybody's undefeated in the National Football League. But I can say that this is a Jaguars team that may be able to make that claim if things continue to progress. They still have a lot of work to do, but it's a very good-looking group. Saturday night, the Jaguars pulled the pads on for the first time after a day without practice yesterday. They're back at it today. They'll be on the field in about 45 minutes for the open session. Fans can attend, by the way, but you must register online in advance at jaguars.com/training camp. Saturday, they reached capacity. Over 4,100 season ticket holders were at practice.
That's great.
So the excitement is certainly there. There is so much anticipation for the season, and there is so much anticipation for the arrival of Jalen Ramsey, who is the only player who hasn't reported to camp yet. He's been back in Tennessee after the birth of his daughter. Doug Marrone said Saturday that he's really not worried about it, that he thinks Ramsey will be in shortly.
He's going to try to get back here as fast as he can, so I don't want to give you a date that, you know what I'm saying, where, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, well, he or there. But, you know, he'll be here when he can get here.
A couple of observations so far. First of all, on Blake Bortles. Been a little up and down. Mm-hmm. His ups and downs have not been as dramatic, though, as we've seen in some past training camps. The peaks and valleys have not been quite as extreme. So I think that's a good thing. Talking with Mark Brunell about Bortles, one of the things that Mark said is he wants to see consistency, wants to see him be good day one, day two, day three, day four. That's really a sign of taking that next step. He does look like he is in better control of the offense and he understands what's happening. The guys around him know better as well. Blake admitted last year that there were some times where rookie wide receivers would be in the huddle and he'd call the play and they'd look at him like, uh-oh, what's going on? And this year, they know what the play is. They're breaking the huddle and going, you know, to their positions before he's finished calling it because they know what's coming. So we do appear, as far as the wide receivers are concerned, which I think is one of the more intriguing position groups to follow during the training camp, pretty much have a good feel, barring injury, who the top five receivers are going to be. Dante Moncrief, the free agent acquisition, Marquise Lee, then the young guys, D.D. Westbrook, Keelan Cole, and the rookie D.J. Chark. There are others who are going to probably be in the mix, perhaps for the sixth spot or some other opportunities. Rashad Green, Deshaun Wynn, Jadon Mickens could be some good players who wind up getting cut and play somewhere else. It was a long time in between when you have Jaguars players getting cut and going and playing somewhere else immediately. Uh-huh. This is just a sign that it's a much stronger roster than we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, and after last season, it's nice to see that excitement, that fan support right out of the gate. People really, don't they have high hopes for...
Without a doubt. I mean, Super Bowl expectations. That's really haven't been here... I mean, honestly, haven't been here. You could say maybe going into the 2008 season, but really, I think you have to go back 18 years to 2000, coming off the AFC Championship game appearance in 1999, the expectations and the hopes are this high for the Jaguars fan base. So, you know, part of this, too, hinges on some of the young players contributing. And looking at the rookies so far, Taven Bryan's a good example. We've seen some good and some bad. On Saturday, when the first practice and pads came along, Bryan showed very good strength. He threw a defensive lineman to the ground in some one-on-one drills. And then when they got to the team portion, he jumped off sides on the first third down where he could rush the passer. DJ Chark has shown some good things, showing some deep speed. And then on a third down play, dropped the ball. So, these are little moments that don't really matter in and of themselves, but when they start to compile, you start to see, well, these guys are still rookies, mm-hmm. and they're still learning what it's like in the NFL. I would say this team is three C's right now: confident, comfortable, and competitive. They're confident in what they can accomplish. They're comfortable in the systems in which they're playing, and it's a very competitive group, offensive linemen and defensive linemen going at it, and neither one of them wants to lose to the other guy.
Well, best of luck to them. A couple of other news and notes. Cole says a big weekend for local swimmers.
Yeah, for sure. At the national championships, no fewer than eight swimmers with First Coast roots competed, headlined by Olympians Ryan Murphy and Caleb Dressel. Murphy swept gold in three backstroke events, the 50, 100, and 200 meters, while Dressel took gold in the 100 butterfly and silver in the 50 free. I think we may be in the golden era of swimmers from the Jacksonville area, which is fun to see as the Olympics approach in a few years.
And the Sharks, arena football going strong over this summer, too. They're doing great.
After a bit of a slow start, they've really kicked it in. They're now tied for the top spot in the lead with one game remaining in the season. They came from two touchdowns down to win on Saturday. If the Sharks win this Saturday on the road at the Maine Mammoths,
I love that great name.
These are not secondary mammoths. These are Maine mammoths now.
That's right.
The Sharks would have the top seed in the postseason and would host playoff games at home. Meanwhile, the Jumbo Shrimp on the road until August the 8th. They continue a 10-game road trip. They were rained out in Mobile. They'll be back at it today with a doubleheader.
All right. Make sure to catch Cole here on this show every Monday and every night on our news partner, Channel 4, the local station. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme composed by the Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Next on 1A, Facebook, fake news, and free speech. You can speak freely on 1A in just a moment. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8, and we'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.